Guten Morgen, everyone.
Good morning.
This is episode 161 of Transmission. And I'm Mark Van Stunek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And, you know, I'm hoping that everybody got their vaccine yesterday.
Yesterday? Why yesterday?
Well, I don't know. Why not?
Well, if you haven't, get it today, because I'm sure you're able to.
Yeah, I'm sure you're able to.
You just can go get it now.
Yeah.
Today's topic will be interesting, because, like, I'm the opposite of someone who's an investor. I'm a divester, really.
you're an anti-vester.
I'm an anti-vester. But several people have brought this up, saying, hey, you should talk about this GameStop thing. And so we're going to talk about it from the angle with which we'll analyze this, not as people who are really into day trading and know all the ins and outs, and who have a healthy slab of cynicism about the stock market and what it is. So,
CK says he can't see me.
I can see you. Let's keep talking. We'll see what happens.
I can see me too.
Yeah, so there might be some sort of glitch with the platform, but I think we have to keep rolling.
Yeah.
So this is the basic. I don't know if you want to describe it, or should I attempt to describe this, Dan, to lay it out?
Go for it.
Correct me where I'm
wrong. There you are. Adam says I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah.
So basically, GameStop, people know it's basically a Blockbuster for video games. No one goes in and buys video games really anymore. No one does this. And so GameStop has become this focus of basically hedge funds who want to short the stock. And when you short a stock, it's basically you borrow against it and then betting that it'll go down so that then you can kind of pocket the difference in the profit. So, like, you're basically betting against the stock.
Right.
But so if someone catches you doing that and they can drive up the stock, which is what's happening here, the news is reporting that it's an army of Reddit nerds. I've heard other things saying that there's other hedge funds involved, and there's basically rich people fighting against rich people. We know Elon Musk has been egging this on, and he's the richest person in the world. So this isn't purely a David and Goliath story that it's being pitched as, but there have been some Davids involved in this. Anyway, so they start buying the stock, drawing interest in it. And so if you have a shorted stock, you have to end up purchasing these stocks to hold your position. It's called a short squeeze. And because you don't want to end up losing everything. And then when you buy it as someone who's trying to short it, it also keeps driving the stock up. So the stock has gone up about 8,000% because of this activity. And these people that are trying to short the stock have lost upwards of $23.6 billion. Now, which is fun.
Of imaginary money, but it's great.
It's great. So it's kind of complicated. If you've seen the movie The Big Short, basically it shows the speculative nature of the stock market.
Yeah.
And that a lot of these hedge funds make money either from the increased value of a stock or the decreased value. They can go either way. Yeah. And that valuations aren't tied to actual real profits. So it's funny to me that Elon Musk has been leading the charge, because Elon Musk isn't the richest man in the world because Tesla makes so much stuff that they sell and make a lot of profit in selling that stuff. Their wealth is largely speculative too. So it all shows this, like, it's imaginary battle between digital wizards. Like, is what it kind of is.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, one of the things to me that I've been thinking about this, I mean, there are just a lot of different ways that we can talk about it, but I do think it's important to set the context to all of this, which is that the stock market as an institution in American society has kind of become like God, or like the church, you know, used to be in ancient societies, right? So, you know, for the last 4 years, the previous administration has been talking nonstop about the stock market going up, as if that is the economy, right? And but even before that, I mean, the constant emphasis on mutual funds, on, you know, retirement accounts, on retirement funds, on putting money in the stock market. I mean, this has become this, you know, kind of the equivalent of salvation. And so, you know, I think that it's very important to look then at anything that happens with this in that context, right? So that, you know, what's important, and you know, we've been seeing this for a long time. I mean, I remember when I was at seminary, and I was involved in this particular committee rehabilitating the seminary campus. And so, you know, we had this this building committee, and a number of the people who are on the board of trustees of the seminary were multi-millionaires and billionaires. And so, you know, a few of these guys were on this committee. And I remember coming to committee meetings and, you know, at the beginning of the meeting, before it had gotten started, they would all sit around and talk about whether the stock market was up or not the day before. I mean, that was their topic, immediate topic of conversation that they could bond over. Right? And so here are these people who are running this religious institution, and that is clearly the sole focus of their life, right? And so part of what's appealing about this story to people is that here you have all these regular folks who, right, in the old days had no direct access to the stock market. You know, you'd have to have a broker, and the broker would have to send some little piece of paper to some guy running around on the floor of the stock exchange, and it was very difficult to have access to it. And now these regular people have access to the stock market and can, you know, outsmart these billionaires, right? And so that's got everybody very excited. And one of the things that it reminds me of is the Reformation, actually. and the whole issue of translating the Bible into local languages. Right, which before the 15th and 16th century, people were burned at the stake for doing that because only the priests were supposed to be able to read the Bible and tell the people what it meant. And now suddenly you have all these regular people reading the Bible and going, oh, I can have access to God without the Pope telling me what to do. And this was very revolutionary and destabilizing in a lot of societies.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, and this is the thing, a lot of this stuff, in some ways it's more accessible because you can, a lot of people apparently that were involved in this kind of turning of the tables used the Robinhood app, which doesn't, there's not very much fees. So you can trade without a lot of making it arduous. But at the same time, like if this were truly democratized, kind of democratizing the market, then we wouldn't have this continuing gap between the rich and the poor. So this is still not entirely accessible to most people. so we have to keep that in mind. But at the same time, it's still, there's some satisfaction to be had in these sorts of maneuvers. But it shows how precarious this is. This is all very precarious. And this is not, so this is, right now, we're in a pandemic where somehow the stock market is continuing to grow. Somehow, yeah, the wealthiest people in the world are getting wealthier, but most of us are not doing better at all. Right. And so we have to, this idea, like, and it, we talk about this a fair bit. I talk about this all the time, but like when you turn on the news and like when they talk about the economy, they talk about the Dow Jones Industrial Average or NASDAQ. That's not the economy. Like that's one way of looking at the economy. From a perspective of Wall Street. But to me, the economy is like how much my standard of, what is my standard of living? Like, will I be able to retire? How much food can I afford? That's not what NASDAQ measures.
No. Well, except for the group of people for whom they are living off of that, right? And so, you know, if you, And, you know, if you have been able to buy into this to enough of a degree where you have enough money to, you know, live off your investments, then that does become your economy, right? But for the majority of people, that is not the economy at all, right? And so, and that's, I think, one of the things to me that this brings up about the sort of frenzy about this. And again, for the individual people who've been able to pay off their loans and, you know, buy their parent a house and, you know, do all these things, you know, that's awesome, right? I mean, the individual stories, and it's really great. That is not going to change the fact that the vast majority of people in America still are in an unbelievably precarious financial situation.
So another way of putting it in more Marxist terms, NASDAQ and Dow Jones measures the economy for the bourgeoisie, not for the proletariat. Although those lines are blurry, right? Yeah. And this, just to put it in perspective, this is happening, like, so we're hearing about GameStop, but there's other companies that are experiencing this, like Bed yeah. Bath & Beyond, AMC Theaters, Tootsie Roll Industries. These companies that you know are going away. So these are being the subject, like, so this, clearly there probably is going to be some shifting. There's already some, like Elizabeth Warren talking about passing new legislation. I'm skeptical. Like, here's a comment just to jump. Let's see, where did that comment go?
I should roll the comments.
I will. I'm just going to jump to one, and then, here, Mark says, can't wait to see how quickly the U.S. government moves to legalize and codify that only the right people are allowed to manipulate the stock market. Now, that's what I think is more likely to happen, because this sort of, like, vacillation in the market is not good for stabilizing the economy the way they measure it. Right. So when we tried to stabilize the economy before, we bailed out the rich people. We didn't help the not rich people.
So. Yeah. And to use the Reformation analogy even further, the same thing happened with the Reformation, right? So what maybe starts out as this impulse of, like, well, let's let regular people, you know, read the Bible, and let's let regular people pray directly to God, and let's let regular people assume that they're going to be okay with their own religious impulses. Very quickly, the other group of wealthy people, right? And this is the idea of, like, Elon Musk loves this, right? Because people have tried to short Tesla stock for years and have almost driven him into bankruptcy a number of times doing that. Yeah. And so now he's like, great, I'm gonna screw these assholes that have been out to get me before. Mm-hmm. Very quickly in the Reformation, the same thing happens, right? So you have Henry VIII going, wow, this is great. Like, not only do I want to marry whoever I want, but more importantly, my treasury is going broke. And so if I participate in the Reformation and burn down all these monasteries and steal all their wealth, I'm going to be able to pay for the stuff I want to do, right?
Not only can I be a king, I can be like my own little pope.
Right, I can be my own little pope, you know? And then you've got, you know, this duke in Germany who's doing the same thing. He's on the council of the Holy Roman Empire, which at that point isn't much of an empire anymore. And he's like, you know, I want to gain more political power here in Germany. And so, sure, Luther can come and live with me, and we'll do the Reformation thing. And again, we'll take money from all these Catholic monasteries. And, you know, and this activity very quickly simply recenters another group of wealthy and powerful people as much as anything else. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that's what we'll see here as well.
Julia points out, it's not imaginary money if you bought low and sold high. No, and this is where, like, I mean, that's good to call out, because to me, this idea between real and imaginary it's fuzzy. But, like, to me, when we think of Elon Musk being the richest person in the world, it doesn't necessarily mean he has the access to the most physical, tangible wealth. Like, there's a speculative quality to it. Now, of course, right. We know that you can withdraw, like, once you withdraw that money and spend it on stuff, it's totally real then. So, like, I don't want to say that they're not actually rich, but there's kind of this weird game involved that isn't entirely based in what we would think about as reality. So like I was talking beforehand, like we're all taught what capitalism is like Dan has seven chickens and I have a cow. And so we barter until we both get what we want. And then all of a sudden now, like you have in the medieval cities, people bringing their cows and chickens and the bones of saints to trade. And this is capitalism. That's not what capitalism, that's not the origin of capitalism. That's called a market. Market economies and capitalism aren't the same thing. Capitalism involves speculation, bracketing off ownership of land and other things to make it capitalism. Adam writes, speculative wealth. Wow, it makes sense, but that term is new to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's, you know, and I am surprised how many people at this point in our, you know, countries and economic history still don't quite get this. But once a company goes public, i.e. once it issues stock that anyone can buy and that can be traded, that stock takes on a life of its own, right? And that's what we're seeing with this GameStop thing, right? So the value of GameStop stock has gone up thousands of percent. You know, is GameStop stop? I can't even say this anymore.
GameStop stock is hit hard three times fast, right?
You know, has this company done any better? Has it sold any more video games? Is it paying its employees more money? Is it, you know, no, not at all. It's no different than it was last week. And in fact, it maybe is even doing worse than it was last week as an actual company, because everybody's buying their video games online now and nobody buys hard copies anyway, except maybe some old person for their grandkid, you know. So So this stock becomes this gambling entity of its own, mm-hmm. that now all these folks and, you know, hedge funds or managers are sort of the favorite prey of this, but it's all kinds of people, right? I mean, it's, you know, people are gambling with people's pension plans. People are gambling with, you know, city money, right? I mean, government has money that's invested in the stock market. So, you know, the state, every state has money in the market, right? And these people then start gambling with it and they invent different ways to gamble, right? So short stock is one of them. But one of the reasons that the housing market crashed in 2008 is that people just invented these weird entities that were these bundles of mortgages, you know, and just said, this is a thing you can buy, right? And they, you know, they gambled until the entire thing crashed, right? So yeah, so wealth becomes, incredibly speculative, and very, very disconnected from the average person in many ways.
Adam writes, digital wizards battling online makes it sound way cooler than it is. For that, I'm sorry. Yeah. Tyler writes, the stock market is just a graph of rich people's feelings. I mean, that's a good analogy. Most Americans don't have a stake in the stock market. The fact that politicians always love to talk about how it shows how disconnected they are from reality. Gus writes, my favorite explanation of shorting a stock is like you sold a library book thinking you could buy it back cheaper before the due date.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, right? Yeah.
Kathleen writes, Scott and I were smart enough to invest in airlines in the cruise industry when COVID hit. I feel like a small victory for those of us who were never involved in the stock market before. Paul writes, I like the Reformation analogy. Populists always come in a lot of different flavors, and it remains to be seen how this is going to affect society, i.e. who is going to actually, it's going to actually disrupt.
Yeah,
that's the question. And so a lot of people are excited about this. I'm skeptical, but I would love to see, I mean, this gets, when the government gets involved, it can make things worse. But I mean, there's different ways that people try to shore this up. So like Bernie Sanders, way back during the campaign season, early on, was talking about trying to make it so, and this to me would have been one of the most socialist things he advocated, that if a company has to have a certain amount of its stocks owned by its workers and has to have so many people on its board that are workers, that if that were happening to GameStop now, and there was some sort of built-in profit sharing of stocks, that maybe would have helped the workers. But I'm pretty sure there's no GameStop employee that's benefiting from this, which shows, again, the injustice of the system. Ellen writes, I've heard of the Big Mac Index. How much does a Big Mac cost at McDonald's all over the world, being used as a measure of living standards? That's interesting. I mean, there are attempts at trying to quantify what the economy is like for the average person. People have attempted different versions of this because there's not enough money in it. They aren't like every day, you know what the Dow Jones is, but the Big Mac Index probably isn't tracked every day. Maybe it is, but I would love for Kai Rizdal and NPR's Marketplace to start sharing those sorts of metrics instead of just the Dow Jones. That would be great. That would be a big win, I think, for us as a society. Aaliyah writes, if you short a stock, you do have to put up the money at the end of the contract. You can, or you do or do not.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
You can use it. You can roll it over into the next period and use your imaginary money to roll it over. But eventually the contract has to be settled. Originally were to create a stable marketplace and commodities for farmers and others so they weren't devastated by crop failure or the like. So it sounds like, from what I'm hearing from you, and I'm just going to assume this is true, that the idea of shorting a stock had a sort of benefit to regular people at one point, and then it got turned into a gigantic game for the wealthy. That doesn't surprise me. That seems to be how it goes. Nokia as well.
No.
That makes sense because I haven't thought about Nokia in years.
In a long time.
It's like the Blockbusters. Like any of these companies that you can't think about anymore because they're not part of your regular life, but they still exist. Like BlackBerry maybe, although they've changed ownership a few times. Adam writes, it's already happening. I read something about this situation being limited to 30% or something like that. I don't understand how it works well enough to say exactly what happened. In fact, I don't even know what specifically you're referring to.
He means it's already happening, maybe in terms of the rich folks trying to take this over or something. But yeah, I mean, it it is fascinating, the reactions. So Robinhood, this app, this morning stopped trading on a lot of these companies. The hedge fund folks have been all over the news, you know, crying foul, like they've been, you know, hurt and wounded by all of this. The status quo folks are going to react to this because it does threaten their stability. And in the same way that, you know, the Catholic Church reacted to the Reformation with this kind of counter-reformation, the same way that Christianity in America is horrified by the fact that Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. I mean, all of these kinds of activities that threaten the status quo, the powerful react to that.
So he's right. So all this is showing that resources are being hoarded.
Mm-hmm.
Adam writes, poor Elon Musk. Poor Elon, he has to settle to be the richest man in the world. Ellen writes, Schrodinger's money. I like this analogy too. Both money and not money until you open the coffers.
Yeah.
CK says, I just need $55 million to go into space. This is so funny. If there's anything that just typifies to me, like how ridiculous those super wealthy are, is like, I got $55 million. I'm going to go into space. This reminds me of why he's going to the moon. Is really what it reminds me of when that happens.
That's great.
It's a great poet. Great poetry. Great poem.
Great poet. Yeah.
If anyone hasn't listened to Whitey's Going to the Moon, it's a delight.
You gotta do it. I thought you could get a ride on that like space plane for only $200,000.
Well, this
I mean, it's lower. It's lower orbit than the space station, so I guess
you could try. That's cool. CK, you could try sneaking into someone's suitcase and kind of huddling there.
There you go. Yeah, pretend to be a science experiment. like deck yourself out as a fake weird plant or something, and
or just wear a white.
You're going to grow an anti-gravity. You know.
I would just show up with a white coat and a clipboard, and then say I have to inspect the bulkhead. Wander in there and then hide until they take off. That's what I think it'd work. Mark writes, pretty much convinced that the only reason companies do an IPO, initial public offering, anymore is because they are ready to get out of providing a product service into the world of literally making money. I think there's something to that.
Yeah, because, you know, the owners of companies, you know, and the share, the private shareholders, if those things exist, which they often do, by the time a company is ready to go public, you know, they're going to make a ton of money on this speculation. And, you know, and I mean, sometimes the idea also is, you know, you want to expand and, quote, raise more capital. But there's no doubt about it that the drive to make billions of dollars, you know, is behind this. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, that's our fundamental organizing principle in our society.
Leah writes, lol, now the Wall Street folks are trying to get the non-Wall Streeters to sell the stock. And of course, that will cool the speculation.
Of course.
All right, so Western society has been game theoried to death. It is really fitting that GameStop has been centering in this narrative now. There is a delicious irony to it being a GameStop. I wish we could stop the game of Wall Street. That'd be great. Mark writes, CEOs are no longer paid to improve a company's product services, but to increase the value of the stock. That is the bottom line of a CEO. Right. It's the bottom line of a company and its shareholders. Right. And it's a horrible basis by which to conduct a human interaction.
Yeah.
Turns everyone into commodity.
Right. And so that's the other big piece to this, right, is that once you have this other realm of your company, right, you now have this public stock. And of course, the, you know, the board members and a lot of the top executives of the company are often getting most of their pay is in stock. It's actual stock, futures, whatever. Now the entire focus of the company is on stock price, right? Is on share price. And so, you know, how the company relates to the community that it lives in, how the company, you know, decides to pay its workers. I hope people notice that when unemployment goes up, right. So when more people are out of work, the market also goes up, right? Which to me is one of the most obvious indicators that this part of the quote economy has nothing to do with the economy that helps people, right? Because if more people are out of work, that means the companies are laying people off, and people are often the most expensive expense of a company. And so their share price is going to be worth more because their profits are going to go up, right? So this is one of the things that to me is clearly obscene about all of this, is that, you know, you would think, I mean, if this was somehow connected to a just, equitable distribution of caring about people, you would think that when more people are out of work, the value of companies would go down. But it's exactly the opposite.
Yeah. Sarah's right. So we often moralize the resources and wealth to hoard and gamble. Yet when people hack the system to meet their needs and community needs, creating safer choices and living out ethics and stewardship, that's like, nah, there's totally different standards. Like when poor people do the same kind of stuff you see these rich people do, they go to jail. I mean, there's different rules for different people, for sure. Yeah. And then like if someone's poor and hustling, we think they're dishonest, but if they're rich and hustling, they get to be president. Like that's kind of how it works.
Yeah. Right.
Adam writes, our currency is very much speculative. We're living on a precarious myth.
Mm-hmm.
Adam writes, isn't a Big Mac almost 10 bucks? I think it's $5. I don't think it's 10 bucks, but this is a great example. Like I was thinking,
you know, I've never eaten at a McDonald's.
I have. I'm not, I wouldn't I say I'm an
I don't know.
I've had a Big Mac or two. But it's a great example of, like, because Ellen brought this up, the Big Mac index. What is an actual Big Mac worth? It's a really fascinating thing, because you start thinking, like, well, it should be worth less, cost less, because if less profits go to the top. Or people right now are talking about how burger prices will go up if the minimum wage increases, and other people saying it won't go up that much. So there's the worker cost and how much profit goes up to the top. But then if we start thinking about, like, the environmental costs, which are never factored into prices, like oil should cost more than it does, but we're not paying for the aftermath. Like, tangibly, we're paying for it in environmental degradation. So the actual cost of things is not based in the real actual cost of the product. BlackBerry? I typed BlackBerry at the same moment you said it. Research in Motion owned BlackBerry for a while, and then I think they sold it. And so now it's just more of a brand that doesn't create their own phones, but it's more of, like, so who knows? Like, I think they're just an Android phone company now. But they're a great example of something that I'm sure people shorted their stock when they were on the decline. That's how a lot of these hedge funds make money. Joyce writes, GME is down to 126 at the moment. So people are losing their nerve.
That's great. Wow.
Gus writes, so the Big Mac index always gets talked about when there's discussion of hike in minimum wage. It's never used to talk about if the company can afford to pay their CEO millions.
Yeah. I mean, the way that people talk about minimum wage and these prices is so ridiculous. Yeah. I mean, we don't have time to go into that now, but it's absurd mostly.
Adam writes, I can't wait until they take a super ship up and call it the Titanic 2 or some shit. a space iceberg.
Spaceberg.
Called an asteroid, but you know. Adam writes, truth be told, how all of this works is over my head. I mean, it's way over my head. I had to read a bunch of crap this morning just to understand what we were talking about, and this is just a superficial level. I'm sure there are people who know this stuff who are watching thinking, these guys are idiots, but you know, we do the best we can. Truth be told, how all of this works is over my head. It's just very clear to me that the game is rigged for damn sure. Especially right now. It makes me sad how popular it's becoming to buy into capitalism in the stock market and communities of color, as if those aren't the tools that built the walls of our oppression. Amen.
Well, and, you know, and this is, you know, I think what you bring up is sort of part of the, I almost want to say tragedy that we're always stuck in. I mean, look, People try to survive. I mean, that's what we all do. And the more difficult and desperate things become, the more things we're willing to do to try to survive. And so, you know, it doesn't surprise me at all that all of these apps and these kind of democratization of the market moves are becoming popular. Because look, what do people hear over and over and over again? You know, the stock market, right? And so eventually they think, okay, well, that's the thing to do. And so if I'm unemployed and I'm sitting at home during the pandemic and I've got nothing to do and I can't get a job, or the job I can get is dangerous and doesn't pay living wage, and now there's this app where I can day trade and I can get on Reddit and get advice from all these people, you know, of course people are going to do that. And I, you know, I'm very sympathetic to that. And, you know, does it make the whole system and the ecosystem and the world a better place? No, not necessarily. But, you know, in the same way that a poor person who doesn't recycle is not to blame for global warming, you know, a poor person who decides to do a little day trading is not to blame for you know, global corporate predatory capitalism. They're not the ones creating and driving the system.
Well, and it shows the work cut out for us. Like, you know, I like how, Dan, you focused on this is a system thing. Let's not be punitive towards the individuals. If we're going to create alternative systems, I don't think it's going to come just because a bunch of people decide they're not going to day trade. Like personally, I don't like, I've told Dan before, like I've been blocked three times by people when I talk about money and fundraising, and people will say, hey, I could help you day trade on the blah, 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 and use this thing. And I'm like, no, thank you. And then they ask why. And I say, I have an ethical problem with that kind of investment. And then they lose their shit on me. Like somehow I said that they're evil when I just said, no, I just don't want to do that. People get upset. So I think it's my ethics. I want to draw a line there, but I recognize that if we're going to create an alternative mutual aid system where people don't have to rely on the stock market, we have our work cut out for us and we have to get imaginative. And I don't know what it's supposed to look like. I think we've all of us in the movements have been trying to figure it out, but this stock market thing, it's not like it's hard. It really is a Goliath, and figuring out how to live in a way that's a little bit different from that is a huge undertaking. Getting through the last comments before we end, CK writes, I feel like I should find someone to teach my kids how to disrupt the market. So when they grow up, they can seize the means of production in the market. Job description, like creating a disruption tutors. Adam writes, but if we raise wages, the money grubbing CEOs will raise the cost so they can continue to make obscene exorbitant amounts of money. So the minimum wage argument.
That's right. Yep.
Alan writes, maybe people will even quit their bullshit jobs. Oh, I can dream. That'd be great if people did things that were for the betterment of everyone besides these bullshit jobs, which is a kind of a reference that people should check out. David Graeber's, I think it started as an essay, and there's a book called Bullshit Jobs. It's worth checking
really out.
Graeber passed away recently, so it's even more meaningful to read his stuff now, I think. Mark writes, is this hanging the capitalists with the rope which they sold us? No, I don't think yet. But it can inspire us to imagine that. This could be a first step towards some groovy activities. Adam writes, I certainly don't blame them. It just makes me incredibly sad because it only feeds the systems that are killing us, for sure.
Yeah.
Capitalism won't save us as oppressed peoples. Capitalism is part of the oppression machine. Alan writes, I consider the U.S. Treasurer admitting that Wall Street isn't a good metric for economy a big win. I didn't hear that, but that is a good win. And I really, really hope that maybe this will at least spark towards us telling more of the truth about the economy as a society. We've had enough of these things happen to where I want us to start reckoning things differently. And if the U.S. Treasurer admitted that, I want to see more of that. That'd be great.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for hanging with us, even though maybe we don't know what we're talking about. That's what makes this so special.
That's why we depend on comments from other people, just to at least share in our collective ignorance, or at least maybe we inform each other. Either way, we're in this together trying to figure this stuff out, and it's a mess.
And tomorrow's everybody's favorite day.
Fascism Friday?
Yeah. So we'll see you then.
What are we talking about? Now Trump's gone, so we don't have fascism anymore. That's how that works. Well,
it's disappeared.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Just great. Like stock prices. So
who knows what we'll talk about tomorrow? See ya.